This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and we're now moving on to revisiting this big question of the power transition here in the country. This is coming after Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad reiterated his promise yesterday to resign after the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in KL. That's, of course, the APEC Summit. That is going to be in November.
Yep, this was after he was asked by reporters if the handover of power to Dr. Sri Anwar Ibrahim would be brought up at the Pakatan Harapan Presidential Council meeting this Friday. Essentially, regardless of whether it's brought up or not, Tun M said, whatever decision is made, I will resign after APEC.
Okay, so it almost goes without saying, right? This issue is a long-standing one. It pretty much precedes GE14, actually. It's been since then, but it's something that has been constantly talked about. It's something that is brought up over and over again whenever there is any sort of political instability in the country. People bring this up. And it has, of course, in the last, I would say, week and a half maybe, been intensified amid claims made by the Sarawak report that MPs from both sides of the aisle, this is including PAS, are signing a statutory declaration in support of Tun M serving this full five-year term. However, according to both Tun M and Anwar, the 94-year-old Prime Minister is in no way involved.
This might, again, I think, be a possibility that Pakatan itself not knowing how to go against some of the moves that the opposition is pulling, or whatever communications the opposition pushes out. In this case, for example, PAS proposing to table a motion of confidence for the Prime Minister. They don't know how to handle it. They don't have a very good communication strategy. How do they counter that? Understandable, they are a coalition. They have many heads to think about. There are many stakeholders, different people with different skin in the game, different kinds of skin in the game. So I appreciate the difficulty, but they really have to sort of figure that out.
My thinking goes more along the lines of with so many people kind of apparently lining up to declare support of Tun M. Firstly, I suppose if Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim does come into the seat of power, he has not much time left to carry out the term, right? It's going to be more than half or so of the five-year tenure given done anyway. And the other thing is, if you are coming into that situation without reasonable levels of support, I mean, when asked who was involved in this declaration, he said that it was essentially people from the opposition, but also
from his own party,
some members of PKR, he did say. And I'm just thinking that, as is, we have seen over the last 2 years the difficulty that Tun M has faced in terms of trying to enact certain things that he believes to be correct, but he in his, you know, sort of more 2.0 version is not steamrolling, right? Or at least not outrightly appearing to be. Instead, there is this, let's be democratic about it, we have to talk to all the components, and it's been difficult to move. Now, if you don't have more support than that, and support across the aisle for that matter, is that going to make your job as Prime Minister that much more difficult? I think we've talked about this role of Prime Minister in a few different ways, but we haven't fully examined what kind of support you need in order to really be an effective one, especially if you are not Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, who has in many ways shaped the role. He is our longest serving Prime Minister. He is now back for a second go. So a lot of what we think of as a Prime Minister is really shaped in legacy by this one person.
Yeah, and part and parcel of it is being able to communicate your vision and your goal if you take up the position. But I think for Anwar Ibrahim, it might be a bit tough, because if he had communicated that, it might seem that when he might come off as someone that's overzealous, maybe a bit too excited for the position, it might be seen as kind of undermining some of the initiatives that Tun M has in mind and the vision he has for that particular position. So he, to get the support, maybe partially he has to communicate those visions, but he can't because of the position he's currently in.
So we wanted to look at this idea of support when it comes to being the Prime Minister. What kind of support do you need? How does that lead to you being a more effective Prime Minister? You can weigh in if you'd like. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And in the meantime, we're crossing over to Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania. James, it's always good to have you with us.
Good evening.
So the role of Prime Minister in Malaysia has traditionally been held by the leader of the ruling coalition. Is this something that's actually written in law?
No. I just say the correct. It's not the head of the ruling coalition. It's just head of the largest party within the ruling coalition. Mm. So traditionally, UMNO has always held on to the post. But that's more to do with the fact that UMNO was the major party that negotiated Malaya's independence more than anything else.
Who determines who gets to be Prime Minister?
This is where the leaders get together and negotiate. But in Malaysia's case, it's slightly different. Part of it is because of the colonial legacy. It was understood that the Malays were the political class. So it was always understood that the candidate would come from the Malay community. In terms of UMNO itself, I think what happened is that the role has changed dramatically. In the old days, Tunku had an advantage because he came from a royal family. But in more modern times, the leader of UMNO is somebody who is seen to be able to balance out all the different factions. And perhaps more importantly, the ability to deliver the goodies to the senior members of UMNO.
So when we think about, I guess, all the different elements of power and support involved, whose support is the most important? I mean, we're talking here about people like members of parliament, the rakyat, industry players, even the king of the country.
Right. Obviously, it is the MPs because they are the one who's supposed to vote for the prime minister in the sitting of parliament to make sure that he has the confidence. Generally speaking, it is really a party politics that will decide who is the prime minister. They don't really take into account who the normal orang kecil, what they think about. So basically, it's very much part of an elite game. The other thing that your listeners might like to know is that traditionally, under the Malaysian model, the prime minister is somebody who's extremely powerful, who centralized power, expand the powers of the prime minister's office. And we saw that happen when Mahathir was prime minister the first time around, and we also saw it during the time of the Najib administration, when you see that the budget for the prime minister's office, was so huge, and he had so many officers working for him that he was basically running a mini government within the government.
The prime minister Tun Lam has said that come what may, he will resign after APEC. What happens after that?
No, the decision will be made a lot earlier. So the good thing about the Malaysian case is that generally people will have agreed who will be the next person to take over. So all these things will not be done at the very last minute. So Friday's meeting is quite crucial. They'll try to set a roadmap, no matter how difficult it is. But whatever it is, if he steps down in November or December, it will be a smooth process.
And I suppose once selected, would a successor have to command the support of all members of parliament?
No, he only has to command a majority of the members of the ruling coalition or ruling party, and they themselves must make sure that they get more than 112 votes in the Malaysian parliament, or more than half.
And what say does the opposition have in who is selected as prime minister?
Very little during the time of the Barisan Nasional. Now, the reason why everybody's talking about it and why people are excited is because there are moves to set up a new coalition. So that's the reason why suddenly this move by PAS and members of the Malay right wing become extremely important. Basically, they're trying to use this issue to see whether there's enough support to set up a new coalition government. So this whole idea about trying to keep Mahathir in power, in my opinion, is just a red herring. The real issue is trying to kick out the DAP and create a new coalition.
Right, which is something that we've been speaking about quite a bit as well. So going back, I think, to sort of something that we touched on earlier, would there actually be a role that the Agong would play in the midst of the transition?
No. What happens is that generally, once the person has enough support to become the prime minister, that person is supposed to approach the Agong and tell the Agong, indirectly, of course, to his office, that he has enough support to be the prime minister, and they will arrange a swearing-in ceremony. At that moment, it is the Agong's prerogative to decide whether that person is telling the truth, whether he or she has the support of the majority members of parliament. if the Algon thinks that this person has the majority support, then obviously the swearing will go through. Otherwise, the Algon can delay the process by giving somebody else a chance to put together another coalition.
What is the likelihood of a vote of no confidence for the next chosen Prime Minister, and what would happen if that were to transpire?
I think it's highly unlikely. This whole thing, the current situation is actually quite weird, because normally when you talk about votes of no confidence, it's usually done by the opposition, but this time passed as a member of the opposition trying to pass a vote of confidence in the government. Normally, when you pass a vote of confidence in the government, it comes from the government on side. So this time, it comes from the opposition side. So that's the reason why I mentioned earlier, this is all part of a wider political game.
And I suppose we will have to wait and see what the roadmap might potentially contain. But generally speaking, would cabinet members still hold their posts once a new prime minister is chosen?
No. Under our system, the prime minister is all powerful, and appointments to the cabinet is at the pure prerogative of the Prime Minister. Now, having said that, obviously, he has to take into account the interests of all the different coalition partners. So, for example, if some of your partners have very senior, capable people, and obviously the party leader of all the coalition partners will have to be included in cabinet. But other than that, the Prime Minister has lots of latitude, especially when a person like Mahathir is holding the post. You have to remember, Bersatu is actually the third smallest party in the coalition, and yet they have a major say in the government in terms of the positions they hold and the portfolios they hold. But the next prime minister will not have the same power as Mahathir, and it will be a much more inclusive form of government.
Which actually, on that note about cabinet members retaining their positions, I just wonder what that might mean for stability, because the transition talks apparently have had an impact on investor confidence, business confidence. If, let's say, a new prime minister were to change the lineup once again, we are potentially also seeing that happening, a shake-up of the current cabinet sitting. Will it affect that vision of stability that perhaps some investors want?
No. What investors are actually betting on now is whether the current Pakatan government in its present form will survive. That's number one. Secondly, investors are actually looking towards the next general election, whether Barisan will make a big comeback. So this sort of preoccupies their mind rather than who is in cabinet. You have to remember, because of the way the government works in Malaysia, ministers come and go. It's actually the civil service that runs most of the ministries.
And finally, we've been circling this idea of the kind of support or the kinds of support that a prime minister needs in order to be effective. So if indeed we do see Tun M handing over, the premiership to Anwar, what will the game look like for Anwar Ibrahim when it comes to garnering support, given that this is not a role that he would be stepping up to after an election?
Well, I think Anwar has all the political skills needed to be the prime minister. That's not his biggest problem. His biggest problem is that there's always been a significant portion of the Malay electorate that is trying to stop him from being the prime minister. So it's not an issue of whether he has the skills to be the prime minister. I personally think that he has the skills. It is that there's always been a significant portion of the Malay community, and I don't know the real reasons why, who are that set on stopping him from becoming the prime minister. So that is the biggest hurdle that he has to overcome, rather than whether he has a vision or whether he can bring Malaysia to the next level. In some ways, what we're looking for, probably for the next few years, the best thing for Malaysia is that we're looking for a good manager rather than a politician. Because I think if you look at Malaysia carefully, structurally and a lot of other stuff in terms of institutions, there are lots of problems that requires a fix. Because what happened in Malaysia was basically, in the last 60 years of the Barisan government, many of the institutions were destroyed within. Perfect example is you look at all the financial scandals that has been exposed since the coming in of the new government.
And James, very quickly, do you see this stumbling block, like you said, of a certain segment of the Malay electorate just not taking to Anwar Ibrahim? Do you see this continuing to be an issue? Is there something that can be done to overcome that, or it is what it is?
It is what it is, and I can count at least three groups currently who are trying to build a very strong momentum against Anwar Ibrahim through the Malay grassroots movement. So he has to find a way to deal with it, because I think Essentially, if you were to do a straw poll, not among the normal people, but among the politicians, Anwar Ibrahim is acceptable to most of the non-Malay politicians in Malaysia, the non-Muslims in Sabah, Sarawak. But I think his biggest problem has always been the Malay community, for whatever reasons. I've been trying to find out, and there are all sorts of reasons being given. But essentially, he has to overcome it. If he can't overcome this, then I'm afraid that he may not make it to the number one political spot in the country.
James, on that note, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania, talking to us about this whole notion of the transition of power and also the kinds of support that the next Prime Minister would need in order for this transition to truly succeed. If you'd like to weigh in, you can call us 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.